Welcome to the first installment of our Stompbox podcast. I'm Joe Gore.
I'm Mitchell Hudson.
And today we're going to talk about boosters.
Yeah.
Depending on how you look at it, the most exciting or most boring of Stompboxes.
But never unuseful, always useful.
Guitarists use boosters in a lot of different ways. Some simply want to make their guitar louder at some points in their performance, like to step out more on the solo.
Yeah, you can use it to make your amp itself sound better.
Yeah. It can color your sound in a really unique way, or conversely, some people like particular boosters because they don't perceive a great deal of coloration.
If you have a guitar with a weak output, too, that can make a huge difference, you know?
Yeah, it can really add a new dimension to, especially if you like funky old 60s pawn shop guitars. It can
be something with an underwound pickup or something.
Precisely. Yeah. So we're going to talk about some of the various flavors in boosters, and we'll work chronologically, going through some of the early ones from the 60s, through some state-of-the-art boutique and geek pedal builder
boxes. Why don't you tell us about the amp and the guitar used for the tests here, Joe?
We sort of went as generic as possible. So we've got a 1960s Strat going into a clone of a Blackface Fender Champ.
Okay. So what do we got first?
Well, first we're going to talk about the Rangemaster, which Rangemaster warrants a podcast in its own right. It warrants a book in its own right.
Yes, so many people use the Rangemaster, you'd be surprised.
But to the guitar community at large, it's really the forgotten effect. I've built Rangemasters and given them to so many really experienced players and producers and engineers, and the reaction is typically, oh my God, my amp has never sounded so good. And it's just so bizarre that guitarists are so slavishly dedicated to replicating signal chains from the past and using the gear that their guitar heroes used. But the Rangemaster, which kind of defined the sound of British guitar distortion from the late 60s through early 70s, so many players under the age of 60 have never even plugged into one.
Yeah, you know, just from the amateur perspective, I have to say, you know, the funny thing, I never even heard of the Rangemaster till I got into the DIY stuff, and then all of a sudden everybody knew about it and it was the must build pedal.
Yeah, but it's still kind of forgotten, and I think the reason it's forgotten is because nobody wants to be in the business of making them, because at the heart of the Rangemaster is a very fussy component. It's a pain in the ass to deal with. All of the boosters we'll be talking about use transistors of some sort, but the Rangemaster relies on a archaic type of transistor made out of germanium. And now in the 21st century, germanium transistors are rare, expensive, hard to find, very unreliable from unit to unit.
Yeah, yeah, the spec is all over the place. Sometimes you get them and they don't have a suitable gain for to make a booster or a fuzz face or something out of,
Yeah, and the transistor, the modern transistor that might cost a manufacturer a couple of pennies per part, would cost many dollars per part. So aside from boutique builders, a company like Boss or Electro-Harmonix that has to make thousands and thousands of pedals isn't about to make a germanium device.
Yeah. I think we got to hear it, Joe. What do you think it sounds?
Yeah, here we go. Here's an example of a kind of a bog standard Rangemaster.
Hey, that sounds pretty good.
Well, Rangemaster is a lot of different sounds. And the thing, too, about Rangemaster is when you talk about, oh, the Rangemaster was the sound of, Clapton and Sabbath and T-Rex and, Mick Ronson and all the great players, Ritchie Blackmore, all the great players who used Rangemasters, is that a lot of them had kind of custom-made ones. Rangemaster is a very simple circuit, but changing a few key components really alters the sound. The most frequent range of variation has to do with how much low end it puts out.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking for the DIY guys, look up a schematic for the Rangemaster with the variable input cap. And that's just a simple idea where you have two caps on either side of a 100K pot or something. And I find that that's actually like a very interesting idea that produces good results. Electronically, it may not be the best way to set up that type of, pseudo tone control, but I've had pretty good luck with it.
I don't notice any drop off in quality relative to a fixed value input cap Rangemasters. So Rangemaster rules. But now we're gonna move on into the post germanium era,
silicon,
and We'll talk about the Electro-Harmonix LPB1, the Linear Power Booster 1. It was a little box from the late 60s that plugged directly into the input jack of your guitar, and it just used a solid-state transistor, a silicon transistor, to make your guitar a hell of a lot louder. Here's an example.
That's another good one. That's got a lot of growl to it.
Yeah, this nowadays you'll see people dissing the circuit a lot because it's kind of got a little bit of a, for lack of a better word, transistory sounding top end. There's kind of a little bit of a nasty brittle thing, which I'd argue would work really well in some musical contexts, but it definitely doesn't sound quite like a tube. But one remarkable thing about this circuit is it's got an incredible sensitivity to your input dynamics. Here's just a quick clip of the same guitar, same amp, same pedal. But in this case, I've got the gain knob on the pedal, the only control on the pedal, turned all the way up to the maximum, and I'm regulating the overdrive just with the volume pedal on the guitar, and you get a huge variation in tones.
Yeah, the overdrive is a little harsh there, but it's kind of nice. You know, I think actually it's got a good grit to it. That's kind of, I don't know, it's kind of lacking in the high end that maybe from the Rangemaster, but it's kind of got a lot of character.
It's got this really cool, you know, dumbbell early 70s rockhead sound. It's
dumbbell.
Like getting hit on the head with a dumbbell.
Oh, okay. Oh, well, I know that. I've had that experience.
Don't you hate it? Nowadays in the, you know, the DIY and boutique realm, interest has probably shifted away from that sort of circuit towards circuits that use, JFETs and MOSFETs, different kind of transistors with, according to many, more of a tube-like response.
Yeah, wow, the JFET has got to be like the darling of the DIY community. I mean, everybody's using JFETs for everything. I think it's like probably one of the most popular little components out there, you know.
Yeah.
And not without reason, you know. I think a lot of the JFET circuits sound really good.
And that brings us to probably the most popular DIY booster out there, mm-hmm. the AMZ Mini Booster, created by
Jack Orman,
a great DIY guru.
Yeah, and, you know, I built a mini booster and I thought it sounded pretty good. Though I wouldn't say that it was a clean boost. If you're building a booster just to get a boost, probably not the mini booster. But then again, if you're building a booster and you want to get sort of an overdrive or a little bit of grit in your tone, mini booster is probably a good choice. You know,
I've made some of these for people, and they're actually kind of startled to learn that it's not really a distortion pedal. I mean, it just has a massive leap in volume that it will just bludgeon the front end of your amp. One of my friends calls his the fist.
It's got a little overdrive to it, you know. I think it's pretty gritty, you know.
Yeah, it's got color for sure. Yeah,
definitely lacks the sparkle or the, you know, that high end kind of thing we get with the Rangemaster.
Which is you know, to many ears that's a plus, because that's one of the things that happens in tube circuits is when they're, you know, pushed really hard, there's a big roll off in high end content. So something that gets kind of darker as you overdrive it more is automatically going to make people think tubely thoughts.
The syrup, though, on the other hand, is another derivative of the mini booster, or very similar to the mini booster in configuration.
Yeah, the syrup schematic looks more than a little bit like the mini booster circuit, but it sounds really different.
Yeah.
Syrup that's spelled SYRUPP, and that's based off the acronym SRPP, which, bear with me, stands for series regulated push pull. Which is that sort of circuit that has the two JFETs tugging against each other.
Yeah.
And the syrup is created by this kind of stompbox genius guy named Tim Escobedo, who published a couple of dozen of his designs a few years ago under the name Circuit Snippets. And if you Google Tim Escobedo, that's ESCOBEDO circuit snippets, you'll probably find it. The original site is down, but it's been archived at all the geek sites.
Very inspiring.
Man, one great idea after another. Yeah, so original.
Very original. Yeah, I got to give that guy a lot of credit. And the very funny thing is he disappeared. Well, I wonder whatever happened to Tim Escobedo, you know?
If you're listening, Tim, we love you. We miss you.
I think we got to hear the syrup now that we heard the mini booster. Yeah.
Here's some syrup.
Got a lot of character.
Yeah, it definitely puts more of a personality on the sound.
Yeah. This is one where it's got a lot of great sound, but I can't see using this all the time. But for that particular sound, it's very nice. I mean, I think a lot
I get
of
inspired
like
every
that.
Time I plug this one in. I mean, I think it's really cool. And also maybe the fact that it's a little bit different. As far as I know, nobody's really ripped this off in a commercially available pedal, so it just feels like something new when I plug it in.
Yeah. Let's hear the sparkle boost. Yeah, what do you think? Sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
Now this is a different topology with a single transistor, so I think this is more related to the Rangemaster, the LPB1, but then again, the device is different. Instead of a germanium transistor or the silicone bipolar type transistors, this is using a JFET. So, it's kind of got a little bit more tubey quality. It's got a great sparkle end. I thought as an easy build, this was like one of the best little projects to make. I'd recommend this one to anybody.
Yeah, agreed.
Try it out, you know?
And engineering aside, from a player's perspective, I'd say definitely falls into the same quadrant of the tone galaxy as the the AMZ Mini Booster.
Huh.
Really?
Yeah, I kind of read Sparkle Boost as more. I'd put it more in the SHO, the Super Hard On or Rangemaster territory. Even though like with the germanium device and the Rangemaster, we're getting a completely different tone, but it's similar. High end or something, or it's got similar high boost, or treble boost.
Well, how convenient that you mentioned the Super Hard On, because that brings us to the whole burgeoning category of MOSFET based boosters and overdrives, and probably the king of that hill is the ZVEX Super Hard On pedal.
Yeah, great easy build. Everybody should try it. Let's hear it.
I think Mitchell and I kind of agree on this one. We just love the way this guy sounds.
Yeah, I guess we kind of talked about this earlier, but I have to say, as far as all the homebrew stuff that I've made, this is the one pedal that I use it a lot. I plug it in with my guitar and my amp. I play with the band. I use this. I may not use all the other goofy stuff like the phase shifters and phase 45s and other stuff I build, but the Super Hard On always is there.
No, it's the kind of pedal you could just stick in front of your amp and leave on forever. And I don't know how many records I've used it on. I mean, just for 10 years, that was like, I just wouldn't think of recording a guitar without having this thing in the circuit.
I don't know what it is, but I feel like I get more character and more of my guitar sound when I'm plugged into the Mini Booster. It just sounds like I'm getting more, I don't know how else to describe it,
I think of the sound as really, it sounds expensive to me in a cool way. It just sort of sounds like you've plugged into a input module on a really great old mixing board or something. You certainly wouldn't call the sound highly colored, but there's just something kind of finished about it.
Yeah, it's got a little sparkle, like a little distortion on the high end, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. In just the right place.
Yeah, it sounds good. Easy build, too.
Yeah.
And what else we got here? We got the MOSFET, AMZ?
Another popular Stompbox is AMZ MOSFET. Booster, not to be confused with the AMZ Mini Booster, another Jack Orman design.
Yeah.
That again, I'd say it's a little bit more distortion oriented than the Super Hard On, but it's got some of the same you know, tuberific qualities.
As far as the MOSFET boost, for myself, my personal experience, I find the MOSFET boost to be more of a clean boost. Like I get a very clean, pristine quality from it, even though the it's using a very similar device, you know, MOSFET, you know, maybe BS-170 or whatever that's used in the super hard on. But with the super hard on, I'm getting a little more tiny bit of grit on the high end, where my MOSFET, it feels more, to me, it feels more like hi-fi clean. And I mean, maybe that's why I like the super hard on a little better, you know. But then again, you know, maybe the MOSFET boost is a better deal for, you know, certain types of playing and certain instruments, you know.
Well, and the MOSFET is definitely been a bit of a comer in the you know, boutique commercial pedal world.
It's turning into a very popular device, you know, and it's supposed to have a lot of very tube-like qualities, you know. What about the Duende?
The Duende is close to my heart. That's another fantastic Tim Escobedo design. MOSFET overdrive based on the 2N7000 transistor. It does really nice sparkly clean. It does really fat distortion and has a really beautiful transition between the two extremes. Here's a little bit of what it sounds like.
Wow, that sounds pretty good.
Yeah, that's a good one. And it's also a fun one. It's a fun jumping off point towards your own experiments. I've definitely got some good results, you know, playing with different, you know, capacitor values and different voltage levels. And there's a lot there. And I'm not really aware of this existing in the commercial world, but it's a cool circuit.
I'm just going to head into the op amps now.
Probably have to back off and, you know, talk about the Klon legend.
Yeah, yeah.
About 15 years ago, this pedal appeared in this weird, you know, custom milled enclosure, Klon Centaur, and it's become, you know, probably the most sought after boutique pedal. You know, they sell, original ones sell for well over $1,000 on eBay. The builder is currently not making them, but the word on the blogs is that he's about to reintroduce it in a slightly, you know, reconfigured format. But you know, a lot of the legend of the Klon is that it's, you know, it's a simple pedal with three knobs, but it's one of those devices that just doesn't have a bad sound in it. And it has a rather extraordinary gain control. With gain all the way down and output up, you get an extremely clean hi-fi clean boost. And then as you raise the gain, it introduces increasing amounts of diode distortion.
You know, I don't own a clone. I played with Joe's a couple weeks ago, and it sounded pretty interesting. But, you know, I have to say, like, the controls are really well thought out on that. Just the whole idea that you have, you know, a clean boost and a tone, and then the idea that turning up the gain, you know, from the clean boost, you know, is kind of a nice idea, you know, just for control-wise, you know, rather than, you know, having a gain control and then you always have to cut something down by turning down the volume, which is the way most pedals work. I thought that was kind of a unique idea and kind of actually very usable.
Well, here's a little bit of the Klon clean sound, which is going to be our focus for today.
Pretty good.
That sounds, yeah. Well, that's only
that's the original clone.
That's the original, and that's only part of the story, because obviously the Klon is also loved for its overdrive sounds. But let's focus on the clean for the moment. Now, there's a couple of circuits you can find online where people have, with varying degrees of success, cloned the Klon. And
can we quote you?
and you know, here's a small stomp. The Klon is a large format pedal. Here's just a small stomp box, you know, that I made, kind of stealing little bits of collective wisdom about the Klon sound from various sources. And you know, to my ear, it comes pretty close to getting that Klon clean sound in a small footprint, low part count, easy to make pedal. Mm-hmm. pretty darn close.
Yeah, it sounds pretty much the same. I can't really tell much of a difference. You know, it's kind of funny too. I saw Joe's schematic for this too, and it's just a single op amp. So, you know, I'd have anybody look that up. It seems like a really great little, you know, just a little section that you could add to pretty much any pedal. You know, imagine, you know, you need a little input boost buffer or something, you know, or an output buffer. It might be just the choice.
Yeah, I'd use it. I think you might use it in some of the same ways you'd use a super hard on. It'll definitely add a little more sparkle to a, you know, funky old pickups, and it's just nice if you want, you know, more loud. Well, I don't know. What are your, you know, out of all the stuff we listen to, which ones grab your ear the most?
Well, you know, to tell you the truth, I have to say the Super Hard-On is my, you know, my favorite out of all the boosters. You know, it just seems to be the most useful, practical thing, you know, and it just sounds great.
One of the signatures of the Super Hard-On has just a single knob that's and painted on the surface of the box is crackle okay, because the gain pot on that circuit crackles.
Yeah, me and Joe, we were talking about this earlier, and it seems that the gain, you know, if you're adjusting the gain all the time, it can be very annoying, and a lot of people were complaining about that. But I find actually, you know, I'm kind of set and forget, you know, with the Super Hard-On. You know, I get my gain set up, and then, you know, I'm just turning it on and off with the stomp switch, so the crackle doesn't really bug me.
It's more like you'd set it to suit your amp and pickups and leave it, and you probably wouldn't change it unless you were swapping guitars.
If you're going to build one of these for yourself, I would definitely recommend getting the reverse, I think it's a reverse 500K pod.
And I believe it's 5K. Just a 5K.
Yeah, it's a 5K, But get the reverse audio log, you know, or the reverse log pot, because, you know, I built one with a linear pot, and all the gain is in the last, like, you know, 10% of the rotation of the pot, so it's kind of a little annoying to use that way, but otherwise it works great, you know.
Yeah, and it's and if the crackle does bug you, a builder online named Soulsonic has come up with an alternate version called the crackle not okay.
Does that one sound good? I saw that, and I haven't built it yet, but I was thinking about it.
Well, I'd play it for you, except it sounds exactly like the Super Hard-On. It performs as advertised.
It's exactly the same.
Very similar, very similar sound with no crackle. So if that's an issue, I definitely recommend looking at his schematic. We haven't gotten into the most exciting part of all, which is, you know, what happens when you combine multiple boosters in a single device, you know, the magic of putting boosters in series. Not a new idea. I mean, a lot of pedals that are out there do that. Zvex made a pedal called a Super 2-in-1, which is just two Super Hard-Ons in series, so it can do everything from a Super Duper 2-in-1.
Yeah, actually, the Box of Rock, I think, Box of Rocks, too, is also just maybe three, I forget, it's like three Super Hard-Ons in series, or four, or something like that.
There's another popular DIY pedal you see around is called the Brown Sound in a Box, that's a couple of AMZ mini boosters back-to-back. And, you know, obviously, putting two boosters back-to-back, you can get a great deal more gain. So, in a pedal on that format, you can, theoretically, if it's designed well, generate anything from, like, a slight little clarifying gain boost to, you know, really aggressive fuzz and distortion sounds.
When it comes to Brown Sound in the Box, that boy, it gets pretty distorted. I built a few of those, and they sound good. I mean, I like the sound anyway, but it definitely sounds distorted. You're not just making a booster there, you know?
Yeah, which brings me to an issue that seems to arise a lot in some of the geek stomp box sites, which is, you know, sometimes there's an attitude of, you know, if someone's just recombining extant components that they're not innovating, or that they're not doing anything worthwhile. And boy, after spending several weeks trying to combine different boosters and make really interesting new composites for one of our future installments, man, there's an art to it. It's anyone who can, you know, stack them up and come up with a unique configuration that sounds good in all or most settings has definitely done a lot of work. So I would take exception to that attitude. Well, thanks for checking this out. We'll be back soon with another installment.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks.